Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I'm trying to think to myself, Drea, is this the last one that we're going to release for the year? I can't remember. Anyway,
yes, not that that matters. The next one will come out like the second.
Yeah, not that that matters in posterity's sake, but as of 2017, when we're recording, we are right here at the end of the year. And what's kind of cool, wrapping up this year on episode 50.
Yay!
Yay! So, so excited to be here to talk some Owlpost with you. But we did want to mention that we got another review on iTunes. Now, this one was not 5 stars. It was only 2. And it's by somebody named Synthesize. And they said that we do not get Snape. And their review was quite lengthy about how we did not get Snape. Now, the reason that we're not going to read the whole review has nothing to do with the fact that it was only 2 stars. It has to do with the fact of how we have approached spoilers, quote unquote, for this series. We're walking through the series chapter by chapter. And part of that has been that we allude to the fact that we, as the readers, Drea and Matt, we've read this series many times, but we also have people with us that have been walking through this series for the first time. A good friend of mine, in fact, is one of those who listens to the show. And if we were to kind of blurt out everything, we would be ruining some things for people who are on this journey with us for the first time. So we've decided to talk about the series from the perspective as the characters in the story, what they know when they know it. Now, obviously, there have been plenty of times in this show where we have either ruined some things or alluded to some ruinations of some things. And we have gotten close to that line, but we try to walk it very finely. And I think there have been plenty of times where we hint or wink wink at you, literally, by saying hint, hint, or wink, wink, that we know that there are going to be some things that change, or there are going to be some changes in the characters or your perspective in the characters. But let's just say this. We do get Snape, and we realize that all of the characters in Harry Potter do kind of move from one place to the next. There are very few characters in this series that don't have an arc, and we will definitely talk about those arcs when we get to the point where the book makes those revelations. So it's going to be a while for some of those characters, like Snape.
Especially Snape, yeah.
Which we will not get until the full revelation about that character until book 7. So you're just going to have to stick with us.
In fact, we're going to get, we are going to get more, probably even more critical of Snape as this goes on before we're able to fully discuss some sort of character development and arc in the full breadth of what his character represents to this series. So
right,
we're going to get even further down on some of these characters until we can kind of put it all together. She really does hold a lot of those revelations to the very, very end. So,
and I do think that a lot of the characters, their actions, good or bad, and specifically speaking of Snape here, him turning out maybe differently than he is now. I don't know. Everybody, if you could see me, I'm pretending to like, ooh, maybe. But that doesn't negate the bad things that Snape does do, or the way that he does treat people, and whether or not that's legitimate or not, or any of those things, we will definitely discuss. But I think it's fair to say that none of these characters are perfect, and Snape is definitely probably one of the most flawed characters in this series. And it will... we'll definitely talk about him, but just to, if you're still with us, dear listener, we just want to assure you, we definitely get Snape. We are just not going into the full literary analysis of Snape just yet because, well, Rowling herself...
We're halfway through book three.
Yeah,
halfway through book three, yeah. So we're halfway through book three level of Snape literary analysis. And we would encourage you that if you do still listen or if you do decide to pick it up and try it again, you know, to give us an additional listen and to feel free to send us an email or a tweet or something. And we can, I would love to talk about Snape in more detail beyond what we can at this particular junction in the series. So I would love to hear more from you or from any of our listeners if they have something that they really want to talk about. Like, I have a huge... personal like crusade for Dudley when we get near the end here that I'd love to discuss and is some people find very controversial, so we can't get there yet, but I mean there's lots that I'm sure Matt has things he really loves to discuss that we can't get to yet, so we're always here if you send an email or you want to talk to us on Twitter or on the Nerd Party on Facebook, any of that. Like, we're always here to have these discussions. Just we can't do them on the podcast yet so that we don't ruin it for those. Plus, there is something to be said about discussing this as it's revealed to us versus based on what all we know. So, yeah. But, I mean, I do appreciate her taking the time, or him, I guess. I appreciate them taking the time to leave a message and a good chance for us to remind everyone that we are trying to avoid spoilers and that, you know, there's so much of what we say that comes from based on the context here and not maybe what we'll feel come, you know, the end, come, you know, episode 450 or whatever we're going to get to by the time we're done with all these chapters. So,
yes.
200 and something, I think you said.
I think
210.
We have exactly 200 chapters, which is going to be super fun. 200 episodes by the time we're done. So there's so much left to talk about, and that's what is exciting. And there are times, if you listen to the show, you know we want to say something, but we don't say it. And what's great about doing it this way is that we will have plenty of time to be able to discuss all of these issues in due course. But like you said, Drea, I do highly encourage you, if there's something you really want to get off your chest about talking about the series, please do. The perfect thing is to send us an email. If you go to thenerdparty.com/contact, you choose a show, choose Owl Post, that email comes directly to Drea and I, and we can just talk all about it without having to worry about that. You can hit us up on Facebook if you want at thenerdparty.com/Facebook. We post all of our shows there. Feel free to comment there. We'll talk to you there. You can also find us on Twitter, as Drea mentioned. We're at @JoinNerdParty, #OwlPost. Dre and I love talking to people there. Again, hey, hit us up on iTunes with a review. Let us know what you're thinking about the show and what you think about what we do here. We really appreciate everybody who takes the time to do that. And whether it's good or bad, as you've seen, we'll talk about it on the show. And so we thank you all so much. And while you're over on iTunes, hit subscribe because you get the shows as soon as we publish them when you do that. So, Drea, we are at the Quidditch final, and it is finally... Yeah, it's finally here!
Bang-rolling out.
So excited. But as you kind of mentioned last week, this chapter deals with the ramifications of what just happened in the very last chapter, which is them getting the letter from Hagrid, the fact that Buckbeak had lost his trial. And I have to say, the reaction of both Harry and Ron here, I'm not going to lie, made me well up a little bit as I was reading it today.
Agreed. It's so sad. I mean, I think, again, it's something we can all kind of relate to, right? There's something that happens in our life that kind of reminds us of what is really important. And this is one of those moments, I think, for them on a real small scale. You know, they realize how much it's going to affect Hagrid and how much, you know, this poor animal doesn't really deserve to die. And it kind of snaps them back a little bit to reality and, you know, distracts them a little bit from Quidditch and from the Firebolt and from the feud with Hermione and school. You know, it's a nice little break for them and a good reminder of, like, what's really important here.
Well, and the fact that it's Ron who immediately jumps to the defense of saying, oh, I can help you with this, you know, and the fact that, you know, he even acknowledges that Hermione has too much to do to be working on this. And the way that she responds of just kind of throwing her arms around Ron and giving him this massive hug and completely breaks down in his arms because she's exhausted. It is really this beautiful moment of Ron admitting with not so many words, I'm sorry, I've been a jerk, and it's kind of my fault. And, well, don't worry about Scabbers, it's fine. Because Hermione also lets go. And what's kind of great about this moment, as you said, it is a place where they realize that the pride that they have both holding on to, that they've been both holding on to, really doesn't mean anything when you face something like this, right? And they're able to just let it go. And it's, again, it is really this beautiful moment. And I think, again, it really touched me to see these two friends come back to what's important, which it's each other. And not just them, but, you know, it's their friendship with Hagrid. And Ron and Harry, you know, with the kind of the talking to that they got from Lupin, you can tell that that message really sank in. And I think that it's nice to see two people take the criticism that they got from people in their lives and turn that around and actually do that 180 that you would hope people would do when they realize, you know what, I've been, a bit of a jerk, you know, and maybe it's not worth it.
Well, and I think it was an easy way for them to put aside their pride and not have to be the first one. You know what I mean? Like, neither of them had to be the first one to be like, I'm going to apologize. Or, you know, they kind of equally got to apologize and they kind of got to come to this, like, as an aside, they got to take care of this issue while dealing with something else, you know? Which I think always makes it easier when it's not like this heavily focused, like, we're going to sit down and apologize now, everyone, sort of moment. I just loved, though, in the scene how uncomfortable the physical intimacy made Ron. She hugs him and he just, like, awkwardly pats her on the head. I just think that's so funny. And it's so 13-year-old boy to be really uncomfortable with any sort of, like, physical contact with really anybody. I kind of chuckled at that one. I was like, oh, it's so cute and so real.
Well, and part of that is, I mean, the way that she describes it is that she breaks down. Like, she finally lets it all out. And yeah, 13-year-old boys aren't really good at necessarily dealing with, for the most part. There are some. So we're not, I don't want to just paint everybody with a broad brush. But Ron himself, specifically, he's a 13-year-old boy who's not comfortable with dealing with this much emotion. He just doesn't know how to handle it. And it's an adorable scene. But the fact that, like you said, it's this moment for them to mutually apologize without necessarily either one of them losing face, in the sense that, like, we're both wrong and we both admit it. And now we need to move on because we really do have bigger things to deal with. And what's funny is how this scene and really flows into the next one, where they're at the Care of Magical Creatures and they're talking to Hagrid, and Hagrid's having a really hard time in this class. It's honestly the only time they get to talk to him because they're not allowed, like, nobody is letting them leave the castle at night to go see Hagrid. And Malfoy is just being the biggest jerk on the planet. And Hermione's had enough. And this may be one of the best Hermione moments in the entire series.
Well, and this is one of those where the movie totally deviates from the storyline. Because, one, in the movie, she punches him in the face. And this happens much later in the story. She punches him in the face, and two, it happens much later in the story. But I feel like the slap is so much more satisfying. And it feels so much more Hermione to just open hand slap him across the face. I feel like you can get more force with that even than you could a punch in the face. Punch feels, I don't know, more aggressive, where slap feels more like, I don't know, British and disrespectful. But, I don't know. It feels right. I see some queen slapping someone. I don't see a queen balling her fist up and punching them. So I don't know. Feels more regal.
Well, I mean, let's just say it. She just pitch slapped him into next week, and it's awesome. So
I just realized what you did there.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah. Yeah, I made it family friendly. So, and referenced Pitch Perfect all at the same time. So, you know, I think it's just such a great moment because she has just had enough. And I love that she not only slaps him, but then she goes for her wand. And Ron is like holding her back and she's like, get off me, Ron. Like, the whole thing is so brilliant. And Malfoy and Crabbe and Goyle are like, they're bewildered and befuddled of what's going on. And he's like, let's get out of here. And it's just fantastic. And then I love that she's still in the moment. She just turns to Harry. She's like, you better beat that son of a... That's basically what she's saying. She doesn't say that, but she's like, you better beat that kid. If Slytherin wins, I just can't stand it. Like, it's wonderful because this whole thing, this whole chapter is about this Quidditch final. And you found this way to kind of galvanize the entire school except for Slytherin against Slytherin because of all of this stuff that's going on. And it's wonderful the way that Rowling has kind of woven this tale to get us to this point to where Hermione would be into Quidditch, like that she would be as invested in this game as everybody else. So,
yeah, because you wouldn't think, I don't know, you wouldn't think this is really up her alley or something that she would be interested in. And she's been supportive, but not, you know, overly active in it. You know, she tries to make them play by the rules and she goes out to the matches and is excited. But honestly, she's not like a super fan or anything like that. You know, it's not like her whole world. This is that moment where she's like, it's that house pride coming out where she's like, you better beat that SOB. That sob better go down. Like, she's just real angry.
Son of a banshee.
Yes, we're talking about a son of a bandicoot.
Yes. Well, and what's funny is that they're walking back from Care Magical Creatures, and they get to Charms, and they're like, Hermione? She was like right behind us. Where is she? And she misses the entire class so that they don't see her at lunch. They go up to the common room, and Hermione is asleep.
She's just passed out on her book.
Like, she's... And then they wake her up, and oh my gosh, it's one of Hermione's worst moments, in the sense of, for herself, that panic of, oh, I missed a class. Oh, what am I going to do? Oh, I got to go talk to Professor Flitwick right now. Oh, it's... Oh, man. But the fact that she's missed this class, like, it keeps adding to this mystery of, like, what the heck is going on with Hermione?
How she, like, missed it without realizing she missed it because she was just with them. And you would think that she would have known that, like, she didn't go into the class. And, yeah.
Well, and...
just so suspicious.
It's great because Hermione seems to be on the verge of a nervous breakdown, and sadly for her, after talking to Professor Flitwick, it's divination next, and she's not really liked this class, and apparently Professor Trelawney has seen with her inner eye that their final is going to be on crystal balls, so that's what they're going to be, you know, delving into next, which... Her answer to Flitwick under her breath is just phenomenal.
Well, and I like that she just happened to know that it was going to be Hermione, but she didn't want to sway her.
Like, yeah, that no. She was going to leave and leave her class. Yes, absolutely. I just... the three of them together in this class is just... hysterical, because they're as they're looking into it, Professor Trelawney walks by. I was like, does anyone need any assistance? And Ron's like, who needs help? It's pretty obvious. It means there's going to be a lot of fog tonight.
I wish that had made it in the movies because that was so funny. It was so funny, because especially because all three of them laughed, like actually laughed in the book. So it was real good. Like that was well played.
Well, and then of course Trelawney thinks she sees the Grim and Parvati's, you know, orb, and Hermione's like, I'm out. Like, she checks out big time, and it's just, it's so great because the whole class is just, their mouths are agape with what just happened, because the fact that Hermione is walking out of a class, they can't fathom this. Like, it's awesome. It's so awesome.
Like, someone broke Hermione.
Yeah.
That was basically what happened, is someone broke her. Like, she's broken. Nobody knows what's going on. They just let her go.
Well, and it goes to show, like, this whole thing is happening over Easter, their Easter break, which the kids are like, this is a holiday, because they apparently have the most homework they've ever had. And everybody is having a nervous breakdown. Neville Longbottom, Seamus is complaining. Hermione is just beside herself with the amount of work that they have. And I always think that this is something that's really interesting, is how wizards follow the Christian calendar, in the sense of, like, that their holidays are the same. Like, that, you know, you get off for Easter, you get off for Christmas. Like, you know, like, they follow all of these major holidays. And it's just interesting, because that may, wink, wink, come, you know, to play later on in the series. Just saying. You know, might want to put that one in the back of your noggin. So, you know.
One of those spoilers we talked about.
Yeah. So, I'm just saying. I'm not spoiling. I'm just saying.
No, like, that's just one of those indicators.
Yes.
That you mentioned.
Yes, absolutely. And I love, too, that they're so busy that Ron has been the one to take up the study for Buckbeak's appeal, because Hermione doesn't have time with all the tests she has. Harry has Quidditch practice every single night, to which Wood is constantly writing Harry, telling him, we have to win by this much. And Harry's just had enough. He's like, I know, Oliver, I get it. I got to catch the snitch when we're over 150 points in the lead. I got it. Because we got to win by over 150. I got it. We got to be at least up 50. I get it. Ugh. Poor Harry.
Yeah. I could just see it.
And not only that, but the entire school is going crazy with this whole game. And there have legitimately been scuffles in the hallways with Slytherins and Gryffindors, a couple of whom ended up in the hospital wing with leeks sprouting out of their ears. That sounds painful.
I find it interesting that she turns the entire school against Slytherins. Like, that house, no other house likes them. Like, everyone is pulling for Gryffindor, which is so weird. I mean, it makes sense.
I mean, when you have an entire house of cojones, and not the good kind, right? You know, like, an entire house of jerkwads, It's not surprising that the entire school can't stand you and wants you to lose, you know? Like, you make a living, quote unquote, at school of treating everybody else like dirt. It's kind of like I forgive me for all of you fans who are fans of the Patriots, but honestly, anytime they're playing, I don't want them to win. Because I don't like them. Sorry, just saying. It's just putting in that in that context. It's like that team that everybody hates, except for their most passionate fans. And everybody wants to see them lose. So
it's like anytime Tom Cruise comes on a movie, I don't want it to do well. I don't want people
but
to
I
go
like
see
the
it.
Mission Impossible movies. Anyway, that's
I
a
don't
whole
like
other
Tom
subject.
Cruise.
Anyway.
Total aside. So totally went off onto a tangent there.
Everybody Everybody has been following Harry around. In fact, Wood has given them instructions that Harry should never be left alone so he's not attacked by those Slytherins. So Harry can't even get to class on time because he's got like this posse following him around everywhere.
Ugh, that's just, it's just crazy that this stuff gets so out of control. I don't know. My husband and I are not like sports fans at all. And it's stuff like this as to why, like, it's so unnecessary. Like, the fact that that is needed to protect him, which I don't think that's unnecessary. I don't think that he honestly probably needed the protection, right? But the fact that that's necessary to me is just mind-boggling. It's baffling. It is just a sport. It was just a sport. Like, this I can kind of get on board with because you've got some school spirit associated with it and there's some sort of pride, but, like, I can't get, this is why I can't get into sports. Like, this is why I don't, because I think this is just so crazy. It's so much energy that could be used to do so many other things. It just says a lot about Slytherin that, like, they have to send protection after Harry, right? Like, that just speaks volumes to what that house represents and what those students are capable of, which is just disturbing.
Well, and it's funny you say that because my wife and I are very big soccer fans, and our team just went to the final this year again. Last year we won, and sadly this year we lost. So, you know, we get it. We're huge fans, but we're not insane. So, you know, it's enjoyable. We love the atmosphere of it, but yes, this is a little bit insane. And I kind of love that, you know, as they're all getting closer and closer, even Hermione gets into it. She puts down her books. She's like, I can't even concentrate. Which for Hermione to be able to say is pretty crazy. And I think, you know, before we even get to the game, there's one really interesting thing that happens is Harry wakes up early on the day of the Quidditch match and he looks outside and he sees Crookshanks hanging out near the Whomping Willow with a big, black, shaggy, ginormous dog.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. He's actually seen the Grimm.
Yeah, but what I find interesting here is this little thing is, you know, he tries to wake Ron up to be like, Ron, 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 come look at this. But at the same time, he sort of realizes that, you know, hey, Crookshanks can reacted like to the Grimm. Like Crookshanks ran away when the dog came out. So that makes me think it's not just all in my imagination, because how could Crookshanks have seen it if it was just like, if it wasn't a real thing there, like if it was just an omen or something I'm seeing in my mind, how could Crookshanks see it or react to it? Right. So that was really interesting is we're using the cat as an indicator that like there's more to this than we maybe think.
Yeah, this whole episode, this tiny little scene that happens here is so fascinating to me. It's one of those things like Harry just, what? And then nobody else is there to see it. So by the time we get to the next day and the Quidditch match actually happening, he just forgets it. Especially since, you know, as they're on their way to the Quidditch pitch and Cho Chang tells him to have some good luck and he finds himself blushing.
Wink.
Oh, it's so cute. It really is. Aww. Like,
to be young again.
Yes. Yes. I really like that we get these little moments like this because they really, I think, bring to life the school in a way that doesn't necessarily happen in the movies. It's those little moments that bring everything together. And so, and then of course we get to the Quidditch match, which you were talking about kind of the craziness of things. You know, Lee Jordan, going crazy with his commentary and Professor,
I love Lee Jordan in this chapter.
Yes, Professor McGonagall getting all over him about it. And the craziness of what's happening in the game, like nobody at this school has seen a game this dirty, but there gets to be at this one point where Lee Jordan's just going nuts, and Professor McGonagall didn't even tell him off. She was actually shaking her fists in Malfoy's direction. Her hat had fallen off, and she too was shouting furiously.
I love that. First of all, he adds this like colorful commentary, not just like getting angry like he does, like you were talking about, where he starts yelling curse words at Malfoy over the speaker. But he also adds some sort of like satirical commentary when he talks about, well, it looks like they've traded size for skill or skill for size, you know. And Harry's like, oh, they're all ginormous. Like, I think it's just so funny that he adds all these like personal quips, but also like isn't afraid to just start screaming. He curses loudly at Malfoy, you know. And I want to say this is one of the first times, too, we're reading about Quidditch. We actually see, like, fouls being called by Madame Hooch, who actually calls a foul and is like, hey, you're not allowed to do that. We're going to take a penalty, which I don't know that we've ever really experienced in a Quidditch match before. And most certainly not quite as frequently. I want to say we had at least three or four of them in this, you know, two pages alone. And I like that the one that, was it Angelina who took it, was so angry that she missed, because she was so angry at Malfoy for pulling on Harry's broomstick. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing that you were, like, there are fouls in Quidditch. At least at the school level. And so that there are things that you can't do. And it just shows you how dirty this game gets. But, you know, I love that Harry is able, obviously, to pull it out. He's able to get the snitch before Malfoy, and they win the game. And I think the thing that's so beautiful is the wrap up to this chapter on how everybody is just so excited. You know, Wood speeds towards him and he grabs Harry around the neck, just sobbing into his shoulder. What is it with people sobbing into people's shoulder?
This chapter.
Yes.
This chapter just makes you want to cry, whether out of joy or sadness.
Well, and McGonagall is sobbing harder than even Wood. And like everybody is so happy, and Harry thinks to himself, man, I wish there were some Dementors, because I could produce the best Patronus ever right now. And as we talked about the fact that Harry hasn't had a life of super happy memories, that here's a moment where Harry's life just, he feels that elation, that joy that just overcomes you and fills you, where you feel like you could take on the whole world, you know? And what a good feeling for him in a book that really is going to challenge him as a character in just a few chapters. Like, it's going to get very difficult for Harry. And he's going to have to make some very, very hard choices in this book.
Well, I'm grateful that she has them win, because it's always nice to have, the good guys win, if you will. The ones who didn't cheat the entire way through. Like, no one likes to see the Malfoys of the world win, unless you're a Malfoy of the world, and then you're probably happy. But don't be a Malfoy. But at the same time, it almost had this predictability to it. The tension that tries to be built, you know, to have them win almost isn't there, because there's just no way she's not going to have them win, right? Like, you know they're going to win the House Cup. He deserves it. There's no way she'd kick him again, like kick him while he's down again, you know? So I feel a little bit like, my husband calls it like the Marvel movie effect, right? Where good guys always win, right? Like, they can't not win. Otherwise there's no next movie. It sort of has that same predictability feeling to it a little bit, which I'm disappointed of having that feeling, but I don't know that it would have been the right thing to not write it that way. You know, I don't think it would have been the right thing to have Slytherin win and have them lose by 10 points. Like, I don't think that would have served the story at this point. So I get and appreciate what she did, but at the same time, it was one of those where, like, I wish she'd found a different way to do that, or made it feel a little, a little different somehow. I don't know how she would have done that. So obviously she didn't either, but that's just,
You know, I think the most interesting thing about it is that, for this chapter and for where she is. You know, she has already taken away the Quidditch Cup from Gryffindor twice already because of extenuating circumstances. And I think that the thing is that this is very much like sports. And honestly, this just happened to our team, my wife and I's team, that lost. We went up against the team who was the best team in the league this year. And they came out and played like the best team in the league. We did not. So we lost. And I think what she's saying here is that the last 2 years, they would have won if those extenuating circumstances hadn't happened, because Harry had changed the game for Gryffindor. He had made them the better team because he was just clearly the best seeker that anybody had seen at Hogwarts since maybe his dad. And the last time they...
In this case, they said it was Charlie...
Yes, Weasley. Charlie Weasley was the best seeker that, well, at least he had been the one who helped them win the House Cup. And so, you know, I think that that's the inevitability of it. And for being a sports fan, it makes sense. Like, there is that inevitability that this team is going to win because they're just clearly the better team. And so in that way, I liked the reality of it. Like, that's just kind of what happens in many sports games. Now, any team can win on any given Sunday, as they say, you know, about the NFL. But it's the same way with most sports. You know, honestly, usually the better team ends up winning unless they just don't play like it or they make the huge mistake. And so, that's a lot of way to say I think that I get what you're talking about. But for me, it was just kind of like, yeah, if they hadn't have won, it would have just been almost bad writing in a sense, because it yeah. So anyway, I'm love the fact that we end this chapter here on this high note, because the rest of the book is really going to just spiral into the end as next week we get Professor Trelawney's prediction. So not next week.
Why don't we always...
But whenever the next episode's coming out, which I can't even remember right now because it's at the end of the year and I'm having a hard time remembering anything.
It'll be, I think, the 2nd of January, the 2nd?
Yes. So we're not abandoning you. We're coming back.
Not for long. We just
both need a break. And yes. And I won't even be in town for one of them. So, yes. But, this is such a... I don't know. I really love these chapters. And I just love this book. And so it's really exciting to just be in this series. And it reminds me, as we read through it, I'm just reminded over and over again what makes it so special. And I'm really glad that we decided to do this. And hey, we made it to 50 episodes, Drea. So
yay!
So,
and I had a baby in those 50 episodes.
I know. You didn't even know, folks. You didn't even know because we didn't even miss.
Like, nobody knew.
So, if anybody wants to talk to you, as we talked before at the very beginning about Harry Potter and all that stuff, where can people find you?
Sure. If you want to come talk to me about how fulfilling it was to see Mr. Malfoy, or I guess Mr. Malfoy Jr., get his comeuppance this episode between being slapped in the face and losing the Quidditch Cup. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick and on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. You can also find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars. And of course, as we record this, we have The Last Jedi coming out, so we'll have plenty of coverage of that for you, so make sure you check that out. You can also find me on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones. We just had a new episode come out about Rom, so check that out if you're into Star Trek. You can also find me on the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, talking about all the fandoms we love. We'll be talking about Star Wars. Drea might actually join me soon, hint, hint, for talking about some Doctor Who. So we have such a blast, and we're so excited to be diving into a bunch of great stuff next year, so make sure you check that out. And then last but not least, I do a show with my good friend Courtney where we kind of talk about the morals, meanings, and messages of film through the lens of faith. So you can find all those wherever you get your podcasts. But thank you so much for checking your Owl Post this year.
Mischief managed for the year.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.